Well, folks, welcome to the Noble Man Podcast. I am Mike Young, and I'm excited to have with us today retired Colonel Art Athens. He's a retired colonel from the Marine Corps. He's always a Marine. I have learned that over the years that no one ever escapes being a Marine. He's always a Marine. And so we're just so thankful to have him with us on a podcast because he's going to be a guest with us at an upcoming men's conference in Fredericksburg. So, Colonel Athens, welcome to the Noble Man Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mike. It's an honor.
So much fun. Well, I'm gonna share a story. This was not in our notes, but I got to know you because one of my sons was a student at Virginia Tech. He was in the Corps of Cadets, and you were there to speak to a leadership workshop one day. And Zach called me. He said, Dad, you gotta listen to this guy, Art Athens. Colonel Athens came and spoke to us today about leadership, and you gotta get him to come and speak at conferences. And so I looked you up, and man, so thankful for the way that even my son sitting in that chair among other future officers and seamen and Marines and airmen could hear your Christian testimony woven into your stories of leadership. So thank you for being that type of example for our young officers across the disciplines. It's been fun to get to know you as someone who lives that way.
Well, I remember you telling me that story, Mike, and I was very grateful for your son paying attention that particular day. And I do remember very distinctly talking there at Virginia Tech. So again, I'm glad to be part of your ministry and what you do, because it's very impactful.
Well, and I appreciate that. Now, you just retired a few years ago, now with COVID, it's probably about 6 years ago that you retired, five or six. Is that correct?
So my Marine Corps service ended in 2008. My Naval Academy as a civilian experience ended in December of 2018, when I turned the reins over at the Stockdale Center for Ethical Leadership, where I was serving. And since that time, I've been in an independent role. So it's been a couple of years now. It goes very quickly, as you know.
Oh, it really does. Now, tell me, what are you doing in this? You're in kind of a private consulting role, leading, speaking, teaching leadership, teaching ethics. What does that look like in your life right now, post Naval Academy and post Marine Corps?
Well, Mike, it looks like going to the airport a lot and waiting to see if my flight is on time or has been canceled. But I mainly speak. I kind of think of it as bullseyes. In the centerpiece is still Department of Defense activities, still doing some things, particularly with the Navy and the Marine Corps. And then out from that is the federal government. So various elements. I'll be going, interestingly enough, next month speaking to the IRS and some of their leaders. I figured that was a good time to do it right before taxes were due. But that's an example. And then out from there, I do quite a bit in the educational realm, principals and superintendents of schools. I do law enforcement, and I do very few corporate type things. But every once in a while, if I feel the mission is deep enough and important enough, I'll kind of go into that area as well. And in between that is when I get the opportunity to do some men's conference, to do some preaching. And then the other part of my life is kind of in the coaching and mentoring piece. But that really is all pro bono. That's just part of my service is kind of working with men who are in leadership positions, and it's varied, but trying to help them figure out the broader picture of not just their business or organization, but also what does their spiritual life look like as well. So that's what I've been doing since January of 2019.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of balls to keep in the air and figured out. In addition to, now you've got a large family, so you and your wife have a number of kids. Why don't you tell, just so that our listeners know that story a little bit, and where you guys
Sure.
are with family.
So we have 10 children, and we have 19 grandchildren at this point, with the 20th about to be born. And that's the other major mission in my life right now is spending time with those family members and investing in them as well. I take Misty, my wife, with me as much as I can. Typically, if it's a one night speak in the morning and fly back, I'll have her just stay at home. But if it's more than that, we try to go together. We've been married 45 years now, and I enjoy the time with her immensely. So it's been great to have that part as well. But yeah, we have a large family, and they're spread around the country, from Colorado to Minnesota to Texas, Connecticut, Michigan, South Carolina, Georgia. So we got them in quite a few places.
That's awesome. Well, plenty of places to go and visit, and you're learning how to grandparent, grandfather from a distance, which is probably challenging at times.
It is. We do a lot over FaceTime, but we also make the effort to try to see each family two times at least in their home, see how things are going there. And then we have a family reunion once a year. This past year was the first time everybody got to be there. We have some military, law enforcement, and others, and sometimes they haven't been able to come. But last year we had 38, including my wife's mom, who's going to be 93 here next month. So it was a great gathering. So we do that once a year. My oldest son is the social director of the family, and he figures out where and what the weekend's going to look like. But it's exhausting to me, but it's a lot of fun. It's just hard to, there are just so many people there and trying to catch up. That's why we make the effort to sure. go out and see them where they are when we're able.
That's awesome. Well, I know at the core of this, what drives all of this is not only your desire to teach leadership and be an example of a leader, but you are a man who loves Jesus, who follows Jesus, and who is devoted in everything you do to living by biblical principles. And I'm curious, you've invested in so many. Who discipled Art Athens and showed you the way to walk in it, to get close to Jesus and to have him permeate your life and turn you into this type of leader, this type of husband, this type of father?
Well, I'm grateful to the Lord for putting a lot of great men in my life over the years who have been part of that process. Just very quickly, I grew up on Long Island outside of New York City. I attended a beautiful 17th century constructed Presbyterian church. My parents were not Christians, but they were churchgoers, and they were insistent that the children went to church. At the age of 13 is when I went to communicants class, which would allow you to actually take communion in the church. And it typically was just memorizing things, memorizing the books of the Bible, memorizing the Apostles' Creed and the rest. But I was fortunate that Mr. Johnson was an insurance executive who taught the communicants class, who went beyond the standard kind of curriculum and really went to the gospel. I had really never heard the gospel before he presented it. And that's when I committed my life to Christ at the age of 13. And at 15, one of my sisters was in an automobile accident and was killed in that accident. And I really saw that as a sort of a crossroads for me. Was this faith real? And by God's grace, he showed me he was worthy to be trusted, even in tough situations. And right after that, I got selected to be a deacon in this Presbyterian church. Really had no mentors. My dad was a great mentor, but not necessarily in the biblical sense.
Sure.
But a lady in the church, because I had become a deacon, gave me this little blue book, I can still picture it, that had nothing but Bible verses in it. Every day it would have a black, bolden set of Bible verse, and then verses from the Bible connected to it. I had not really read the Bible in detail. I read that all the time, every day, and that began to help me to be ingrained in the Word. And then when I went to the Naval Academy, that's probably where the real mentoring part started to occur, through the Fellowship of Christian Athletes that I was a part of there. Some of the men that were more senior to me. And then the senior chaplain there at the academy, Chaplain Bob Bedingfield, became probably the first person that had really invested in me one-on-one. And he continued to do that. I just caught up with him literally a couple of months ago just to thank him again for what he had done.
Wow.
And then going forward from that into the Marine Corps, that just became a set of men that just kept showing up in my life and investing in me again to keep my walk going strong. And I could name a number of them that did that, both those in uniform and those out of the uniform, some in ministry, some not in vocational ministry. But there were just a lot of men along the way that that cared about me and taught me some important things, some people I had to go to when things were tough or I had questions. So again, I'm very, 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 very thankful for those men, every single one of them.
I love this story. I mean, even the lady at your church who gave you the book probably had no idea of the impact that that was going to have. I mean, maybe she prayed over that and hoped, but here you are mentioning something that happened 40 years ago, 50 years. Yeah. And so that just reminds me that we can never discount a small act of investment in another person's life. We just never know what that's going to turn into. And then I think you said Bob Bedingfield.
Bob Bedingfield. Yeah.
Bob Bedingfield and the long investment that he made in you, because he noticed you, it sounds like. And that's, it sounds like I hear Paul speaking to Timothy in this, looking for the faithful men who will teach others also. So he invested in you, and that investment has been multiplied many times over. Talk about how you have taken what you learned from those chaplains, those ministry leaders, and you have poured your life into the lives of others, including your own family. But how has the ministry of discipleship and the gospel been multiplied through you as you've invested in others?
It's one of my favorite things in the world to do is to be involved in a man's life and my daughter's lives. I don't want to leave them out, or my daughters-in-law, but particularly for men that are not part of my family, of seeing how I can assist them along the way. And I think what I learned from others was you got to listen very, very well. Mm. You've got to ask good questions. You need to be willing to think about, well, what resources would be helpful for this person, either in the Bible or other Christian books that might be of assistance. And then are there people that we could connect them with that would also help them on their walk? Those four things were always very, very important to me. But the other thing that I've learned, and I learned this from the first pastor of the first church that Misty and I went when we were first married, when I came into the Marine Corps in Yuma, Arizona, of all places. And Dick Osnes was his name, or is his name. He's still alive and just incredible in his 90s. But he showed me, if you want to invest in men, you got to go where the man is. And he was just excellent at that. He introduced me to someone who was a truck driver in Yuma. And Pastor Osnes said, you know, if you're gonna be involved in this guy's life, you need to set something up where you drive around with him for the day and see what he does. And I did that. And he talked to me about farmers that were in Yuma. You know, if you're interested in the farmers, set something up, go out and be on the farm with them. These folks that are in a store, stack the shelves with them. I just have seen that principle over and over again. And I just recently read it. I don't know who it's attributed to, but said, you know, if you want to be a good shepherd, you got to smell like the sheep. And the only way you're going to smell like the sheep is to be with the sheep. And not in your setting, but in their setting. And I really have felt that lesson that was taught so many years ago has been one of the most effective pieces of how to be involved with men and in their lives.
Yeah, that makes me think about it. I think it's Acts 4:13, where Peter and John were at the colonnade, and the crippled man was there, and they healed him. And the official said, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated common men, they were astonished, and they recognized that they had been with Jesus. And so,
what a great line.
Yeah. And so we can go and be with other men. And in doing that, if we're living well and loving them and being Christ's man in that spot, then they can, by extension, be with Jesus because we're present with them. And so that's a big, big deal. I love that. So, well, let me jump to another question. So I've got two sons in the military. Now they're Army guys. One's an infantry officer. One's a Chinook pilot. But one of my questions that has hit me a couple of times when my oldest son was talking about going into the military, he went to West Point. I had some guys who said, "Hey, Mike, why would you allow your son? Why would you affirm your son to go into the military? It's such a dark place spiritually." And, man, our experience has been anything but that. There are certainly dark places, but both my sons have been around some good and godly leaders and some good chaplains. And they've had an opportunity to be ministered to and to minister to others. So speak to the father who might be listening to this, or the young man who's considering the military and questioning, is this a place for a man of God, a Christ follower, to be present? What's your thought about that as I toss that out there?
Sure, Mike. Well, I was confronted with this early before I even had a military career. I was applying for the Naval Academy, and you have to get a congressional or senatorial, or there are special categories, but for the regular person, you got to get a nomination. And that's part of the process. And I grew up in New York, and one of the two senators was Senator Jacob Javits, who was kind of well known back in that time. And I had an interview directly with him. He was Jewish. My resume at that point clearly saw that there was some Christian connections. So he asked me the direct question in the interview, a question I had not thought about at all. He said, "You're on the bridge of a destroyer. You've been given the order to load this particular gun and shoot to the shore. And you know that the place where those shells are going to land, there's going to be some civilians. Are you going to accept that order or not?" And I said, "Senator, I have to admit, I have never thought about that question, and I'm going to think about it deeply." I got a nomination from him, so he must have appreciated my honesty, but I was caught flat-footed. So then I began to really look closely at what the Bible said. I got a hold of a little booklet called "May a Christian Serve in the Military" by General Harrison. Who actually was a retired Army general. He had been part of the negotiations at the end of the Korean War. He had a very distinguished career and a very strong Christian. And in that booklet, he pointed to a lot of areas. I remember the one that struck me the most was the trail of the centurions in the New Testament, and how Jesus interacted with them, how the Bible kind of portrays them. And I thought, you know, the Roman Empire was much rougher than what we have today. And right. there were godly centurions that were serving. And there must be a way to do this. So that kind of was my convincing that this was an honorable profession. And the other thing was being this instrument of justice for beyond just like my two sons in law enforcement. They're the instruments of justice locally, and the military is the instrument of justice in a broader sense. And I really feel, though, that Christians really have to sense that they're called to be in the military. I don't think this is just a job to take on. I think it's a calling both to serve very well professionally, but also clearly see it's a missionary field, that both those things have to be operating. I've been concerned a couple of times in the military where there's someone who certainly looks like a strong Christian, but they see themselves, their main role is to evangelize, when their real role is to be excellent in their profession. And the evangelization piece can come with that, but it's not the primary. You have to be called in to actually serve in the military in that capacity. But I hope Christians are going in all the dark places, if that's the way people want to describe it, because right. That's where we're supposed to be. Light, light, salt, and a city set on a hill, as Jesus said in Matthew 5. So I think the military is just another one of those areas where God's people need to be there.
Well, and you mentioned you have two sons in law enforcement, and that's another area where, man, it's tough. You see the underbelly of society, and so it's challenging. I think it you know, grabs at your emotions, the stuff that you see, the stuff that you deal with, but there's also an opportunity to be God's servant in the midst of chaos and crisis. And so I think probably the things that you've said about the military would apply to law enforcement as well. Is that true?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of my sons was told by one of his mentors, he said, you're about to go into a profession where you're going to be the light that pushes back the darkness. And I think that's very, very accurate description of it. At the same time, both of the sons who are in law enforcement have no inkling of saying there is no sin in the world and that people are basically good. They've learned there's plenty of sin out there. And so we have law enforcement, we have military, we have medical, we have business, we have homemakers, we have quite a wide spectrum. And, you know, my prayer has always been that they all serve in some way. And you don't have to serve in uniform. You know, there's tons of ways to do that. And I think they've all found that. And we're very grateful for that.
Well, Art, one of the things that you know about our ministry, Noble Warriors, our mission statement says we serve churches as they equip men to walk with Christ and lead well. And so our entire focus is to work through the local church to see the church, the bride of Christ, disciple men well. I think so many ministries, parachurch ministries, will go around the church to get to the guy. But I really believe that the work should be through the local church. And so you've probably been through chapels on base, and you've seen chaplains do various ministry, but you've also seen some secular church environments. What have you seen, in addition to what you've said about discipleship, what have you seen churches do well in terms of gathering and investing in men and stirring them up and truly discipling them, not just preaching at them, but discipling them to walk along with Christ and to learn to lead their families and lead their lives, lead the church well?
Well, I think one of the things I've seen is that it takes a couple of different avenues of approach to really make it work. I think some churches, I was just talking to the pastor at the church we're at, and he was saying, hey, we have this men's ministry, but we mainly just have social events. You know, they like having barbecue, they like doing these, but there's nothing that's going deeper. So I do think the social piece is a part of it. Men, you know, like to do some fun things, go to ball games together and the rest, but it can't stop there. And then to me, the next segment is bringing men together where there's a spiritual focus, whether it's a men's breakfast, men's retreat, whatever that might be. But it still comes back down to that one-on-one, the ability of a man who's further along reaching back down the ladder to bring the next person up, and at the same time having someone above them on the ladder that is reaching back to that person as well. And then it goes right back to what I had said about this pastor that we learned for. You know, if you really want to be involved in a man's life, you got to go where they are. You've got to understand where they're coming from. I mentor and coach, and I don't know how you want to describe it, but a couple of collegiate athletic coaches. And, you know, you can't do that from a distance. You've got to end up in their office on the practice field. I can't do that all the time because they're in diverse geographic areas, but you better do it sometime because that's the thing where the connections are really, really made. And I think the other thing is pastors of local churches, and I think Dick Osnes back in Yuma did this so well. He looked at who he had, he looked at where the gifting was, and he deployed those people with those giftings in a marvelous way. Probably one of the most effective pastors who could recognize gifting and then use those gifts for the good of the church as a whole. I think some people are just, you know, they're naturally gifted at discipling and doing that one-on-one better than others. Well, they should be very active in that. There's others that are better at teaching, serving, you know, all the gifts that are mentioned in the scriptures in Corinthians and Ephesians. We need to deploy those gifts gifts well. But I think it takes a multi-pronged approach to make men's ministry work. I don't think you can just count on one, you know, on one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it strikes me that we've got to sometimes watch for the guys on the periphery too, because I think sometimes the guy who's in the middle of things may not be the guy you're looking for. It may be the guy who's on the sidelines, who has really an undeveloped talent to share. And,
correct.
Boy, to be capable of noticing that guy and calling him into service, could be transformational, in his life. And so, I appreciate that. Well, let me pivot just a little bit. So your final assignment at the Naval Academy was you were the director of the Stockdale Center for Ethical Leadership at the Naval Academy. And so, I mean, how do you, and I may ask you a question here that you can't answer. I don't know, but how do you teach ethics there and do it as a Christ follower, but live within the guidelines that you have to live within? And it sounds like that could be a tightrope at times, but knowing how you're wired and what your focus is, it was probably a wonderful experience as well. So how did you balance all of that?
Well, Mike, you're right. There are tensions that are going to be in a secular environment. And I think, you know, I think Christians sometimes are looking for a formula, you know, a mathematical formula that will work in these secular environments. And I don't think there's a mathematical formula. I think it really comes down to Matthew 6:33, that we've got to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to us, including how to operate within that kind of environment. And I just find the tougher the secular environment, the more important prayer and Bible study and fellowship and all those become, so that you have the wisdom that God has promised to give. So in a place like the Naval Academy, when ethics is taught, it's really an exposure to the various kinds of ethics, ethical thought that is historical all the way from Aristotle, you know, on. The Naval Academy does include the command, you know, the idea of command from God as well. I mean, it is part of, but it's only one part. It's not the whole segment of how ethics is presented. I'll say that there's a very interesting presentation that was made a number of years ago by Chuck Colson, who's famous for prison fellowship ministry. He was called the hatchet man for President Nixon, you know, and was not a Christian and became a Christian. But he was a graduate of Brown University, and he gave a presentation there, "Can the Ivies Teach Ethics?" And his conclusion was, actually, you can't, because if you don't agree upon a standard that's unchanging and that is a core set of values, you're going to just confuse people. So I think it's, you know, probably times at the Naval Academy, people were confused by being introduced to all these different ways of thinking about ethics. There are a lot of case studies that are used, but I always look for the opportunity to have those one-on-one discussions, primarily in my own office, with midshipmen that were curious or seemed like they might be interested in something more. And then I also look for speaking opportunities within the Naval Academy that gave me perhaps a little bit more freedom of how I would take biblical principles and use them within a secular setting. So, you know, yes, there was tension, but I look at it as a whole, and I see how God was at work in various ways. And even with some of the faculty members, of being able to mentor and invest in their lives as well over the time that I was at the center. So in part, people always ask, well, what about the, you know, the latest policies? I mean, this goes back to the military question you had before, these policies that seem out of sync. I still go back to Daniel and Joseph, you know, and I've spoken at some of the conferences about Daniel in particular. You know, here was a guy who was in a brutal environment. I mean, you think we got it hard with some of the policies. I mean, try being in Babylon and in Persia. But they were given God's grace to operate within that environment and to make a difference. And I always saw that they were my role models, not just at the Stockdale Center, but in all the different places that I was in the Marine Corps and elsewhere, where, you know, it wasn't a Christian school, it wasn't a Christian ministry. How do you live that out? And I think God is the one who provides that guidance on a day-to-day basis of when to speak up, when not to say something, when to pray for someone, when not. And I think anybody who is listening to this and is going to be at the conferences coming up who are not in full-time Christian vocational ministry, that they've got to understand how critical that walk is with the Lord every day. Because if you're missing that, you're going to be off base in those kinds of environments. But when you're walking with him, you can be assured that he is clearly guiding your words and your actions and your thoughts as you do that. So that's how I look back on that experience.
I love that. And part of what I, you know, there's so much to pull out there, but one of the things is you were among those midshipmen, established relationships with them that allow you to have, in some cases, a next level conversation with them and answer other questions that may have been that occurred to them, but they were not able to voice in that particular environment. Sure. And so, again, while we would not call that discipleship or shepherding necessarily, you were among what could be, in that case, future sheep, and you were able to establish a relationship and leverage that relationship for God's good, for kingdom advancement, perhaps, and to bring clarity to them. And so, yeah, I think that's what a fantastic example and a reminder to us to invest in those relationships to build credibility and trust for next level conversations. And we can all be doing that wherever we are, as you've already mentioned. So that's huge. Yeah. So let me just ask you one final thing. The host church for this event is very near Quantico Marine Corps Base. As a matter of fact, when I actually started out my career as a teacher up in that area, and I lived on a farm that overlooked the road that wiggled back into the gate at Quantico. So familiar territory for me. Encourage the Marines who might be listening to this, or former Marines who've been through Quantico, or maybe were at Parris Island and they stood on those yellow footprints and they got indoctrinated inducted into the Marine Corps. Speak to those guys and invite them to come and be part of something next Saturday.
You bet. Well, Mike, my experience in going to the conferences that you sponsor is that there is solid teaching that goes on. There is inspirational music, and there are relationships that are built. And those relationships, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that's what it's really about. I mean, God puts us in certain positions, certain job areas, et cetera. And that's just the vehicle to establish relationships. I was speaking to a CEO of a large company and saying just that, you know, the vehicle you have right now is this company, but it's the relationships that are going to last for all of eternity. And that's what's really important. So this relationship building at every conference I've been a part of, I've met somebody who was not a Marine, who had a different background, who had a different professional path that I found fascinating and I learned from, and in some cases have continued the conversation with them. So us Marines, we can get very insular, and it's good to break out of that sometimes. And this is a wonderful opportunity to do that, to meet a wide variety of people, to be inspired, to be taught. And most importantly is to meet some other people that you never know what that impact's going to be on your life or the life of the person that you're interacting with. I did a men's conference at a place not so long ago. And as I was walking in as one of the keynote speakers, there's a man who grabbed me and said, all I want to do is I just want to pray for you before you go in there. And I was so taken by that. Again, it was people to people, and that's what these conferences provide more than anything else. I mean, I'm going to be a keynote speaker, but I'm not the main thing. The main thing are those that are going to be attending, and you just never know what those connections mean for the long run. So I know Marines, there's going to be Marines there. So if you want to find more Marines, you can do that as well. But I think the breadth of meeting others is one of the great advantages to come to this particular conference. And I'm honored and excited about the opportunity to share some thoughts as well about some things I've learned in my life that may be of benefit to the men there.
Well, I love it. We are certainly looking forward to having you with us and praying for your good health and safety as you travel in the interim, and for God to stir your spirit and prepare you to speak to into the hearts and lives of the men who will join us there in Fredericksburg. So, Colonel Athens, thank you so much for your time. Any final words to guys here as a final parting comment?
Well, Mike, I guess repetition is always important, right? That people don't need to be instructed as much as they need to be reminded. And I'm just reminded more and more every day of my life how critical prayer is for ourselves, but more importantly for others, how important reading the Bible is every single day, how important it is to be connected to a good church, to be in fellowship with others, to be encouraging and be encouraged. It's always about the basics. I mean, that's what Marines are about. We do the fundamentals extremely well, and that's how the Christian life is lived. So that would be my final parting shot, Mike. And again, it was a pleasure to be with you.
Indeed. I love that. Do the fundamentals really well. Read your Bible, get connected with a Bible-believing church, pray, be a man of God wherever you are. That's awesome. Well, thank you, Colonel Athens. We'll look forward to seeing you again in just a few days, actually. And I am so thankful for your time here today. God bless you, sir. Well, folks, thank you for joining us for the Noble Man Podcast. We were excited to have retired Colonel Art Athens with us. He's going to be one of our speakers at our Fredericksburg Noble Warriors Men's Conference. And we will look forward to bringing you another keynote interview from one of our other conferences in just a week. So God bless you, men. Thanks so much for joining us.